Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
You are listening to Tax Tuesday. This is Toby Mathis and
Jeff Webb.
And Jeff now, you guys don't see it, but Jeff actually has a really nice goatee. I was trying to fix it for him. I was trying to make it a little more accurate. And I thought I did a pretty good job. I put a little salt and pepper in there. Anyway, Jeff, you are looking dapper today, sir.
Thank you, sir.
And we have a lot to do today, so I'm just going to jump right on in. So hopefully everybody can hear. If you can hear, just say, I can hear. Guys, we're going to start a little something new because there are so many questions that come in, and I've just been having a real heck of a time getting through them all, me and Jeff, or Jeff and I. Is it me and Jeff? Me
and Jeff and I.
Jeff and I? Yeah. We brought in Elliot Thomas, who's a very, very capable, not only an attorney, but an accountant, and amazing part of our professional program. So he's on the chat. Pio is on the chat, Pio Sam, and he is an amazing CPA and fantastic tax professional, very knowledgeable. Probably should have kept him off for that because now he's going to say, hey, I'm very knowledgeable. But he is. And then Tavia Harder, who works in our bookkeeping department. And that's what we're trying to do is make sure that we are getting you guys as many answers as we possibly can so that you guys can save money. Nowadays, it's really important, so all joking aside. What I know right now is that our government has not helped us a ton. Somebody says, what's that on Chef's pick? I gave him hair. I gave him he has a goatee now, so I'm trying to make it look accurate. I'm not the best artist, but my mom always said I was good at it, and so I take her at her word. I feel like those guys that go on to American Idol, and everybody, they said, my mom says I can sing, and they're just atrocious, and so I guess that's probably my art.
Yeah.
Follow us on social media, please, if you can, because we're always putting out content. And we will certainly, here, I'll put that back up for you. Some of you guys, I just did that really quickly. I already see a bunch of questions. Somebody says, happy birthday. Thank you. It is my birthday. I am 30 years old again today. I have anniversaries at this point. And I'm catching up to Jeff. A few years, I'll overtake him. Let's see. So anyway, there's all our social media.
I hope not.
That's right. You don't want to stop aging. That means something bad happened, right? Yeah, you can ask your questions. I'm going to try to go through and answer live. I'd love to wrap with you guys. You throw a lot out there. And you can always send in your questions to Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors. We are getting hundreds of questions a week, so please bear with us as we get your responses. We don't charge for this. If you need specific advice to your situation, that's not just a general question, but it starts getting into, hey, I did this, this, and this, and I need to know what I should do, then you need to be a platinum member. That's all we ask. So you should have the day off. Every day is a day off for me. If you guys don't know that, then I don't have to work. And I shouldn't say that, sounds conceited. Nobody really has to work. We could all just not work. It's just we might be in precarious situations, but I have lots of real estate all over the country. And I like doing this, and Jeff likes to do it, mm-hmm. Believe it or not. And Jeff is my senior, and he's way smarter than me, and he still likes to do it. So I just do whatever Jeff says, pretty much. Someday he may give me a day off. This is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. You know, it's tough times. And if you could save money on tax, fantastic. And you're going to see there's a lot of questions in here about everything from the EIDL loans, the economic injury disaster loans, to the PPPs, you name it. So we're going to get through it. And guys, we will get to your questions here in just a second. So here's the opening questions. We receive money from the sale of a property, not in an LLC. We have LLCs in a corporation. Chances are a corporation is probably the manager. Can we put these funds in our corporation? We'll answer that. If you lend money to your business, can it be interest-free? If there must be interest, then how much is required? You're going to learn about federal AFR rates today. Yay. What questions should be asked when interviewing a bookkeeper for a syndicated apartment investment? Is it possible to sell a piece of raw land to our real estate entity in order to have the entity pay taxes upon the sale instead of us personally paying. I can already tell Jeff is going to really enjoy today. Hey, look, there's me. Dobie, you should. When should I create an LLC? Just before starting to invest or after? We'll answer that. My husband and I use self-directed IRAs to loan hard money to real estate investors. You're going to have everybody ask who you are. Actually, that's not a bad thing to do, guys. If you know people and their retirement's scaring the heck out of them, you might want to say, hey, do you want to loan me some money? We hold the note on the property and interest is paid back directly into the IRA at closing when the note is paid off. What tax documents do we have to provide the borrower each year? If I transfer my rental property that has a mortgage to a land trust that's under an LLC, what happens to the depreciation that I've been using for the past years when I do my taxes? It seems like a complete mess tax-wise. Tax-wise is one of my favorite words. If my job has been furloughed and I want to take money out of my work 401k, I put a 410. God knows how I did that. That means you have a really big 401k when it's a 410k. No, it's a 401k. Here, I could actually fix that. Since I've been using my pen today, I'm going to do this. 401k. It'll probably be repeated somewhere. And move to self-directed IRA. Are there new rules to follow? Will it be counted as income? And we'll certainly answer that. And I know that's a big thing for a lot of you guys, that it's been tough. I'm in a city where they shut down our hospitality industry and we had 40% unemployment around the strip, like really close to that. You guys are so nice to me. Everybody's hit me up. Hi, Seth. So Seth's on. My CPA tells me putting a California property into a Wyoming LLC will trigger California taxes and fees. Is this correct? What is the best entity to use as a real estate agent? How do we claim taxes on a property in a partnership while keeping it separate from our personal assets? This is a really long
question. Question,
but this is a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we grab this one. It is usually one that I wouldn't grab because it's so flippin' long, but this has so many good nuggets in there that I felt like we should do it just because we have a lot of these people that are doing the PPP loans. So if I use the new PPP loan for payroll and rents and utilities, that it is forgivable. But since I can't open my spa business now and all employees are getting unemployment, can I hire contractors to do repairs and have that count towards the forgivable part of the loan? Do they have to be employees or can I pay them as independent contractors? If my payroll was 40 people, with many of them part-timers, with a monthly payroll of $80,000, and I spend $40,000 per month on 10 workers, do I get 50% of the loan forgiven or 25%? Does payment of utilities and rents count towards the forgivable part of the loan? That all changed on Thursday, last week. It all changed because Congress got together and changed things. So we will go over that. And I like it when Jeff jerks and goes, what? You know, they changed it. It's not going to be earth shattering. It's just they gave us a different mix and a longer period of time to do the forgiveness.
Okay.
Is preferred stock with preferred return and equity participation considered debt in the context of triggering UDFI on IRA deals? Do I have to pay taxes as a 501c3 nonprofit employer on monetary or non-cash gifts given to employees, such as bonus checks? Bonus checks being a gift. I just love that. Since Arizona is the only state that requires the name and address of beneficiaries to show on deeds, how can one form a land trust in Arizona with the beneficiary as an Arizona LLC, which would be owned by a Wyoming holding LLC? How can the trustee get around that? And the answer will shock you. The SBA website is not very clear on what rental home costs I'm allowed to spend. SBA EIDL, which is EIDL loans or economic injury disaster loans. So if I say SBA EIDL loans, that's what we're referring to versus the PPP. So SBA loans out the EIDL funds directly. A PPP is through a bank. So the SBA is doing these EIDL loans. They are still working on the first tranche, guys. I don't think they've opened up the application process since April 16th, since they shut it down on the first ones. Am I allowed to spend the SBA EIDL loan funds on? Okay, I understand that I can use the EIDL funds to make monthly mortgage payments for my rental house. Can I use the EIDL funds for capital improvements on my rental home, such as installing a new roof? Can I use the EIDL funds on all of the following expenses? Maintenance, repairs, utilities, property management fees, leasing fees, HOA dues. I'm allowed to include EIDL loan interest payments on my Schedule E as an expense of my rental homes. If yes, what are the guidelines on how the EIDL interest is assigned against my multiple rental homes? So we'll go through all these. Like, again, I bit off a lot more for Jeff and I. Jeff is so kind. He comes in here and he goes, what are we answering? How many did you do? We're supposed to do like 10. And I always go, this one I might have gone one over.
I just tell my girlfriend I'll see her on Wednesday.
All right. Hey, I want to let you guys know how awesome you guys are. So this is a personal thank you. You guys don't know Dave Rafus and his group, but that's One Veteran Foundation. We did a wonderful fundraising for them with you guys. You guys all get a star because they exceeded the goal by over 300%. It's up to you guys. I really appreciate that. And what this group does is this is going to be a very real issue that you're going to be reading about a lot. Suicide is a really bad problem in the United States. And we are losing 22 veterans a day on average to suicide from PTSD and what I call non-visible scars from being in really nasty situations, and they come home and it's hard to deal with and they don't want to tell anybody. So this is one of the groups that we work with to combat that. And you guys raised a bunch of money for them. You guys are awesome. I'm not going to pitch this today. I'm not going to tell you guys to give them money. I'm just going to say thank you today. And I want to give you guys a quick thank you. Last week, we did something that I'm going to do again this week. And that is I am going to give you something. But anyway, these guys do a great job. What they do is they train service animals to pair up with veterans that are suffering from depression and PTSD. And the success rate is virtually 100%. We do not see suicides when there's a service animal that's been trained to work with them. It gets their attention when they're going down a dark hole or when they're starting to become despondent. And anybody will tell you that's had a dog, usually when you're feeling the worst is when they come up and lick you and stuff. Hey, Jim, if you want to help, if anybody wants to help one veteran, just let Patty know and she'll give you their email directly. Dave is a super nice guy. He's a Marine who works with veterans and just does a fantastic job. And they're able to train service animals for a couple thousand an animal, whereas if you went and did it professionally, it would be about 50 grand. So they do a fantastic job. So here's my quick thank you. Get a free book. Get free tax-wise. You just use the offer code, same one we did last time. Just use Tuesday. You may have to do all caps. I don't know. I think you just do Tuesday, but feel free to do that. I don't know. Patty, you're going to have to give them all the link. I don't know where I put the link. It's a good one. I like to just throw things out there with no links. But Patty will share out the link with you so that you guys can go do a free book. And, again, if you haven't read Tax-Wise Business Ownership, there's about 100 different tax deductions. I did this back in 2001 and let's see, when did I publish it again? This is the fourth version, and I'll get you guys all set up. And that's a big old thank you. And it goes to everybody, guys. It does come with a free consultation, but by all means, get the book and read the book and then decide whether you want a consultation. This is about putting money in your guys' pocket. All right. We have a whole bunch of questions that were asked early, and I want to benefit, I want to give credence to those people who ask lots of questions early. So can you lease space? Oh, somebody's already answering these. This is so awesome. Can you lease space in your house to your C corporation as office space? You could. Would the price be based on the proportionate fraction? Yes, but I'd much rather you not lease space in your house to your C corp. And what I would say, Brian, is that you want to do a reimbursement. You want your corporation to reimburse you for the administrative office in your house. And I see that you've already got some other answers on that too. So I just want to make sure that you do that. What is the difference between Section 179 for automobiles with over 6,000 pounds and bonus depreciation? Yeah, that's
no, there's not a whole lot of difference in the two. Section 179 has a problem that it's limited to the amount of income you have in that activity.
You can't create losses from it.
Whereas bonus can, so you're almost always going to take bonus rather than 179. The only time I've seen that you don't do that is some of the states don't recognize bonus depreciation.
Right, you do. So 179 is a fancy way of saying, hey, if you have equipment, you can write it all off in year one. Bonus depreciation is you can bonus depreciate assets that have a useful life under 20 years in a year of acquisition. So, or any time, mm-hmm. Technically. Yeah. So you can just choose to bonus depreciate it. But under 179, if you fall below 50% usage in your business, you're going to have a taxable event for the value that you wrote off, which can be kind of ugly.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case under bonus depreciation. It's just, as long as it's, I guess you'd probably look at it, maybe it's close.
Yeah, 179's got a lot more restrictions, but, and it was better than bonus when bonus was only 50%, but now it's 100% deduction, so.
Yep. So, and by the way, that where bonus depreciation really shines is when you have assets that are 15 years, 7 and 5, and like when you have real estate and you do a cost seg on it, that's just a fancy way of breaking it down into its components. You can write off about 30% of your real estate in the first year if you want to. And for a lot of you guys, it's a big benefit. All right, I have a C-Corp for real estate investing. I have not yet started paying myself a salary. Can I use a QRP within the company and transfer an existing traditional IRA funds and then use the funds to take advantage of the CARES Act ability to take 3-year $100,000 loan from it? So, Kim, the answer is 100% yes. You just need a sponsor. You don't have to contribute to the 401k. And if anybody's confused as to what's the difference between the IRA and the 401k, an IRA you can't borrow money from, but you can take an early withdrawal up to $100,000. And if you pay it back in by the end of the third tax year, which is December 31st, 2022,
yep,
you don't have to pay tax. They treat it as a trustee-to-trustee rollover. But the IRS has given us some bad guidance on recognizing that tax over the 3 years. They've applied it to an old statute in 2005, which I don't think applies, but that's the IRS's position. Our position would be just don't pay anything. And if you put it back in, you don't pay anything.
Yeah, their position was, hey, this law is close.
Yeah, that was basically what they did. And then they want you to amend all your returns, which is stupid. So we call that them over legislating or being bureaucrats. But Congress definitely wanted to give you a benefit. And the other thing they gave is out of QRPs, you can borrow 100% of the money up to $100,000 should your plan administrator allow it. So you are your own plan administrator. When you have your own 401k that's being sponsored by your C-Corp, so you just roll the money on in there, and yeah, you could do $100,000 loan. It's a 6-year payback on these. This is a big one. This is not a normal 5-year. They're giving you a year of deferral for payments, and then you pay it back over 5 years. So anyway, so we're going to jump into some of the questions. I see my guys, Pio and Elliot. I am shocked these guys are rocking. I see answers all over the place. So you guys are actually going to get all of your questions answered today. This is scary. Fantastic. We used to be able to do that when it was like a few hundred of you guys. Now it's thousands, and it's driving us a little local sometimes, right? We receive money from the sale of property, not an LLC. We have LLCs in a corporation. Can we put these funds in our corporation? What say you, Jeff?
The money received from your sale of your property, you're going to recognize tax or gain or loss on that sale all by itself. What you do with the cash after that, you can put it in your LLC, you can contribute it to your corporation or loan it to either one. You can do that all day long. It's not a taxable transaction.
I like to look at this like, all right, so I sold a property. It's not an LLC, so it's just my personal property. So now I have personal cash. Can I put my personal cash into a corporation? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I can either loan it to the corporation or I can contribute it. I have two choices.
We do get a lot of questions like that. I got money from an inheritance, a gift, this mm-hmm. or that. After that cash is yours, you can do with it what you want. You can put it into any of your entities.
Yep. Look at these guys just knocking these things out. I have a question on you, but here, this is a bad Toby. I'm going to make my little Q&A sign so nobody yells at me. I have a question on UBIT. How is it calculated roughly? And if I have a real estate syndication investment in a self-directed IRA, if K-1 has cost segregation, can the bonus depreciation be applied on UBIT? If the investment is in self-directed IRA, can I move to solo 401k prior to exit? How much does a solo 401k cost? It's actually a really good question. I don't know if you want to hit it.
UBIT. No, go ahead.
So UBIT gets taxed at a flat rate. I believe it's... forget the percentage, but it's high. Is it 35 or something like that? Or what is UBIT?
I want to say 35 or 30. So I think it's 35. I think it's the second highest bracket.
Yeah. How is it calculated? It's on the income that's related to UBIT is unrelated business income tax. What we're talking here when you're talking about debt is unrelated debt finance income, which is taxed the same way, but it's on the income that's related to the debt. So it'll actually be on your K-1. And it's on your net income after all expenses, and depreciation is an expense. So you will not have UDFI most likely on this until you have the gain on it. As to your other question, if you moved it into a 401k, then you don't have it. But I believe you'd have to do some sort of analysis of what the value is on the day that you moved the investment into the solo 401k. So if you just did it, it's worth it to do a 401k right away, and I would contact us to see what the cost would be on a 401k. And you could do a quick, hey, is it worth it? 401ks are not astronomically expensive, but you don't have custodian fees from there on out. So when you do a self-directed IRA, you know, it's 100 here, 200 here, another 100 here. That's all gone when you have a 401k. Wish you'd done it in the 401k in the beginning, because then we could just say it wouldn't matter because you don't have unrelated debt finance income. We purchased a new truck under our names personally. We have two LLC companies, ATV Parts Company and Real Estate Investment Company. How do we determine which company takes the depreciation and does it matter? Since we purchased under our own personal names, does it affect our ability to take depreciation, or do we still need to track miles? Would like to get away from tracking miles. Don, you're always going to have to track miles.
Right.
That just sucks. But you always have to track miles. And the question is, if you're over 50% usage in your business, then it's a business asset that you could potentially put in the business. It could potentially reimburse you. I don't know if you could imagine you could pop it in and get the depreciation. But
yeah, I mean, you could pop it in.
Into the company,
but you're going to have to register the car with the company.
Yeah, I think what I'm doing 9 times out of 10 is reimbursing the mileage, because that's built-in depreciation. It's all the expenses, everything rolled into one, and you don't have to report it. So when the company pays you, you just track the miles as to which company you want to assess the miles to, or to both, and each one writes you a check. If you have a management company, it's really easy. So when you have a management corporation, then life is simple, because you have one company that's reimbursing you for everything. You don't have to report it, and the company just takes it as an expense. And we don't care about that company as what you're using in that of that asset. So if you're not using that truck at all for personal, then it may be worth it to put it in the business, and just make sure you have the right kind of insurance for it. A lot of folks will get personal insurance on a car that they put into their company, and it's not going to cover employees and things like that. So you got to make sure that you have commercial insurance. Let's jump into some more stuff. Anything you want to add on that, Jeff?
You're good.
If you lend money to your business, can it be interest-free? If there must be interest, then how much is required?
Can I give that the first "it depends" of the day?
Let's give them the $10,000 rule.
Yeah, if the loan is under $10,000, you do not have to charge interest or recognize interest. Once it goes over $10,000, you have to give the lowest AFR rate. They use the blended rate, which in 19 was 2.42%, so you can't go below that. New rate should be coming out in July for the blended rate for 20. Hopefully it'll be down a little bit with all the interest cuts. But yes, you must charge interest if you have more than $10,000.
That's federal AFR rates, right? The lowest amount that you could do is, I think it was 90 basis points or a little less than 1% that you're going to be forced to do, right? If it's a long term.
If it's long term, yeah.
But, or you just contribute it and then not have to worry about it. So if you contribute it to your business, then you just say, hey, that's, you know, it could return your capital at some point.
Yeah, the only time this is really good, should come into play, is if you have a C corporation. If you have an S corporation, it's better just to contribute it as capital. Same with a partnership, contribute it as capital.
Yeah. And I mean, even with the C corp, you could contribute in exchange for shares, right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm still stuck on this UBIT thing. I wanted to say, well, I'm going to go find out what that amount is now, because it's driving me crazy. Let's see what else we have. I'm going to zip on. We have some more questions that are popped up here. If you report as a 1099 self-employed for years, then you incorporate or set up an LLC, what is the right way of transferring assets, cars, equipment, tools, others? Would it be better to sell to the corp or rent or lease it to the corp or other? So if you're taking a 1099 sole proprietorship and you're putting it into an LLC, you could still technically operate as a sole proprietor, mm-hmm. or you could, more than likely, I would just make that LLC taxed as an S corp, and I would just contribute those assets. I wouldn't sell it because you get into things like sales tax and gain and all this other stuff. And these are really business assets anyway. So I would just end up putting them in there. Somebody asked a question. The PPP loan amount received is only 50% of the total amount that should have been disbursed. Can I take that part from the EIDL and request approval to be forgiven? Pilar, no, you'd want to go back to the bank, and I believe you can apply for additional funds under the PPP loan. So I'm shocked that they only gave you 50%. You would have had an approval for a full dollar amount, so I don't know why they did that. Somebody says, can we still use 8 weeks, or is it now the 24 weeks? It doesn't matter. Like, if you're 8 weeks, you're fine, but it can go up to 24. But if you knock it all out in 8 weeks, go ahead. You have up until 24. Somebody's asking about, here, I'm just going to go back to this real quick. Somebody's asking about the one veteran. We don't have anything to, the t-shirt drive is done. They're all out of those. But what we'll do is, what would I do? I would contact Dave and see if they have some more t-shirts and stuff. They're probably going to run some themselves too. Or if you guys like it, we'll do another one here in a little while. We'll do another one, but we have to get some really cool designs. I'll get somebody who's a t-shirt guru. All right, what questions should be asked when interviewing a bookkeeper for a syndicated apartment investment? For those of you who don't know what a syndicated apartment investment is, that means that you're raising money for it in an entity with third parties, more than likely accredited investors or people who are putting money in together to pool money to buy an apartment. So what would you do?
So what you really want to find out is what this person's experience is. You want to talk about, find out if they have worked in real estate, specifically with an apartment complex type of accounting. Have they worked with syndications where you have that multiple tiers of partners involved? Are they familiar with partnership? And then what you want them to do is, if they say yes to these questions, just have a, you can't leave it there. You have to let them tell you what they've done, what their experience is, and you're not going to know all the answers. You're not going to know the debits and credits and how to enter depreciation, how to do QuickBooks necessarily. But you can get from what they're telling you if they understand the whole concept of the accounting behind such an investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the easiest thing is I always say, have you done it? Who did you do it for? Call them up.
That's a really good idea.
If they can give you the information. If they can't, because sometimes, like if they work with us, sometimes we can't give out a client information just because if there's attorneys involved and things like that. But you can usually ask a client, hey, would you be willing to? And then here's the thing. With syndications, quite often they'll have internal bookkeepers. So you may not be working with a shop. You may be working with somebody. You may want to talk to other syndicators and say, who does your books? Do it that way. Hey, do you have anybody who's really good? And yeah, and then get your answer that way. Our guys are knocking out the questions. I'm watching this thing go crazy. And when I say this thing, it's all these questions being asked. And I'm watching our guys just knock through them, Jeff. This is mm-hmm. like weird to actually see this happen so fast. We're actually going to get done somewhere close to being on time for the first time in forever. Because Jeff's... I couldn't hear Patty, but she's cheering. if you get the book, do you have to have a consultation? No, I don't care about that. Somebody says, hey, I don't see the questions being answered. That's because they're live and they're coming through. The way it works is I don't want you to see their names if they're asking questions. So I don't show you guys all those. So some people are saying voting is going on. Yes, there is voting. We got to get you guys out of here so you can go vote. Somebody says, what if I have 300 square foot area that I only use for business purposes? Then, David, I would be reimbursing yourself. But here's the deal. You can only reimburse if you are an employee. You can only be an employee of an S corp or a C corp. You cannot be an employee of your own sole proprietorship. You cannot be an employee of your own partnership. So one of the things, like, get the book, get the free book. And David, someone tells me you're the type of guy that would actually read it. I've emailed back and forth with David a few times, super nice guy. And what you do is you read it, you're going to see the difference between the various types of entities. And then this is always a big one for me, is between 280A and reimbursement of administrative office in the home, which you can have actually more than one office. If somebody says, if I already ordered the book, can I get the consultation? Absolutely. Absolutely. Just Susan, just if you can see that one, there's Jennifer there. Anyway, if it when you're reimbursing those things, that's free money to you that you don't have to report anywhere. So it's no different than as our firm, Anderson, if I said to somebody, hey, I want you to do your work from home and I want to pay you to basically house yourself in the house. Ian, you may have a desk at the office, but I'm also going to pay you. And you end up having an administrative office in the house that's only used for business. It's your administrative services for the business in your home. So usually it's going to be an executive. And the reimbursement amount is you add up the actual cost of the house, including depreciation, including all of the costs you're paying, including if you have a house cleaner that comes in and cleans. And what you were looking for is what percentage of the usable square footage is being used by that. Or if you have fairly equal sized rooms, you use the room method. There's actually any reasonable methodology. It doesn't have to be gross square footage. It's none of this nonsense that they put you through as a sole proprietor. And you can write yourself a check every month. You don't have to have a lease. You don't have to have any of that. And you don't have to report it as the employee. So if I reimburse somebody for, you know, box of donuts that they brought in, they don't have to report it. And that's what this is. And there's a whole bunch of things that fall into that category. As a C-Corp, you can actually reimburse 100% of your medical, dental, and vision. As an S-Corp, it's not quite the same there, but you could still reimburse for your premiums and write that off. It ends up flowing through on your personal return, and you get a self-employed health insurance cost.
Correct.
There's just a whole bunch of stuff. If you guys are interested in that sort of thing, I'll give you tickets to our upcoming. We're going to be doing a one-day tax and asset protection online class. I'll make sure that we send it out to this list so you guys can see it. It's absolutely free. People are always asking, what's the strings attached? Anderson's been teaching for 23 years. We do not charge for our classes anymore. It used to be that when we first got into this, all these big companies, we did Rich Dad for about 17 years. They would charge 5,000 whatever bucks. Some of them would start to go down. We just don't charge for it anymore. So if you're going to willing to do it online, we will give you tickets to come in and learn. And there's not a gotcha. We just look at it that we have a tremendous client base that we enjoy working with. And if you
so we don't make them look at a bunch of timeshares before we let them
know. Timeshares. Okay. No timeshares. Right. So, is it possible to sell a piece of raw land to a real estate entity in order to have the entity pay taxes upon sale instead of personally paying?
Yes, but I think we kind of mentioned this earlier. I would rather contribute that raw land to the real estate entity rather than sell it to them. It's really no benefit to selling it to them. You're still going to get basis. You're still going to get that share of the property that you put in your business. I don't know. What say you, Toby?
Yeah, no, I look at it. So let's say you have raw land. You can't depreciate raw land, so we don't have to worry about recovery. So we're talking about capital gains. If I was worried about the capital gains, I would contribute the raw land to an entity and then sell it, because the entity would get your basis in the raw land. And then now it's in the entity and you have a chance to pull it out. But I have a feeling here that maybe they're going to develop it, and or maybe they want to keep the raw land and they just want to, hey, can I sell it to it at a lower basis? So you can contribute. You don't have a taxable event. If this is appreciated somewhat and you're going to develop it and you know it's going to become even worth more money, then I would literally sell it, capture your long-term capital gains on a portion of it, and then do the development, and that's going to be flipping. So
yes, anyway. Especially if you have capital losses you need to harvest, This may be an opportunity for that. The one caveat is if this is personal land,
you're going to probably have to sell it to us, an escort, by the way.
Yeah, I'm not sure you could sell it to your real estate entity if you're still using it for personal purposes. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a tract of land that's attached to your home. And
If you're just doing land and it's not going to do anything else.
No, I guess it can sit in one place or the other, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't really matter. And I wouldn't be too worried if it's part of your personal residence. Obviously, you want to keep it as part of your personal residence because you're going to get a chunk of no capital gains on it unless you really exceed it. But what you do is you look at your different scenarios, and somebody just asked a question like, what makes this different than other tax firms and stuff? Well, we're a bunch of lawyers and accountants, and we do exactly what most of our investors do. So I have well over a couple hundred pieces of property now all over the country, including apartments and commercial, real estate and other things. And that's what I love to do. And that's what I love to clients that do. And you can't learn it out of a book. So that's how it works. It always depends on how complicated you are, who you work with. What we do is we move you up. Is if you're a very complicated or high net worth person, you're working directly with probably one of the partners. And let's go through some of these others. This isn't a pitch thing. All right. Is there a depreciation recovery on inherited rental properties? The basis steps up, Maria, on the date of passing. So if somebody passes away, then the date of passing. And the really cool part is you get to redepreciate it.
Yeah.
That's why, like, real estate is quite literally, it's like the IRS and the tax code is telling you, buy more real estate and don't ever sell it, because you could depreciate it.
Yeah. So if you inherit your grandparents' rental property and it's fully depreciated because they've held it for 50 years,
yep,
it does a complete reset. You start over at what it's worth today.
Absolutely. And you get to do it again. Somebody says, what's a high net worth person? I say usually just genuinely speaking, anybody over $1 million or with probably more than 10 rentals. Depends. So some of you guys are really active, or probably like a doctor who's making, you know, some of these doctors make ridiculous amounts of money. They don't know what to do from a tax standpoint. If the corp reimburses the employee for donuts, how do they record the expense as an ordinary and necessary business expense? So the corporation writes it off. Where would you classify it?
For small expenses like that, it usually gets classified to supplies or things of that nature.
And then you don't report it.
No, the whoever's reimbursing it it's not a 50% meals deduction. It's 100% because it's for the benefit of all your employees.
Mm-hmm. All right. Toby, when should I create an LLC? Just before starting to invest or after? So here's the thing. I'm going to tell you, as soon as you know you're going to close on a deal, you're going to start investing. The way it works is you're in business when you start doing something that's an active business. So if I'm in real estate, for example, and I want to go to a whole bunch of classes and things like that, David, must be a cop's business if they bring it donuts. No, David, Krispy Kremes. They're like, you just give it to your staff whenever they look non-energetic, and then you're going to get about an hour out of them before they crash from sugar. Here's the deal. Is if you're going to buy a property, and that's going to be your starting point on a property, set up the LLC just before you're going to close. I'd rather you close in the LLC unless there's a loan, in which case it's not going to matter. They're not going to let you close in the LLC unless it's commercial. They're going to make you close individually and transfer it into the LLC after. In fact, you probably shouldn't even tell them because it freaks them out. So the easiest thing to do is just to be like, make sure that I hate it when I fall out of a deal and I've named the entity after the property or something.
Oh, yeah.
Then I'm just annoyed. So I like to do it right on closing if it's a business. So again, I use the example of if I go out and I'm going to get education and stuff, you can't write it off until you own the real estate, the underlying real estate. There's actually a guy that went through one of our classes in Orlando, and he ended up being a tax court case. He didn't use us. He went someplace else, and they told him he could write off the education without being a business. We said, no, that's not true. But he listened to the other party. And again, this gets tough, guys. There's no, I'm not going to sit here and argue. I just say, like, this is our position, this is their position. Well, he went all the way up to tax court and lost. And it was painful because his business did not exist until he actually owned the real estate,
right,
which cost him most of it. What you do in that case is you set up a corporation before you do the education or right after you do the education, and then you reimburse yourself for the education expense, and the corporation starts when it's open and it can start managing and doing other things. So you make a corporation that does multiple things. Now it's not an investing entity, it's a management entity. So little things like that just comes from having done it year after year after year, and you start realizing, and it ends up being, I don't know, pretty solid. I like stuff like that. All right, Q&A. There's lots of questions. These guys are really hitting a whole bunch. I love it. But my wife and I purchased a new primary home that we had to sell after a few months due to a job loss. We ended up making a small improvements and selling the home for about $100,000 profit. How should we report this? Now, if you had to move or you had extenuating circumstances, then you are going to get a partial capital gains exclusion under 121.
Correct.
And so depending on what ratio that $100,000 profit is, I think is what it is, would be based off of you and your wife would be able to get a $500,000 capital gain exclusion if you lived in that house for 2 years as your primary residence. If you only lived in it for 6 months, you would get 1/4 of the $500,000 or $125,000. You'd get $125,000 exclusion. So, Marco, if you're out there, let me know. Can you respond quickly as to how long you lived in that house? Because I would actually think this is worth it to go through this. 121, if you guys don't know, 121 is the type of exclusion that you get if you've lived in a house as your primary residence for two of the last 5 years. It's not the last. It's not the last 2 years, it's two of the last 5 years.
Yeah, I'm thinking the way it's going to work out is you're probably going to get to exclude about 40%.
He's going to get a three. He has 3 months. So you're going to get, they literally go 3 out of 24. What is that? 1/8?
1/8.
So you're going to get 1/8 of the 500,000. So assuming that you guys both lived in it for 3 months, this gets really ticky tacky. And there may be I'm not sure of another hardship. This is the exclusion. Are you aware of any others?
No.
So I'm just going to say, I don't know what's 1/8 divided by 1.
You can't see us, but we're doing calculator wars.
Yeah, it's 12.5%. So it's 62,500 that you're going to get as an exclusion. So Marco, you're not going to get hit with a bunch of tax. You're going to get a little bit, but it's going to be a little kiss. And if you did improvement on it, then you are going to add that to your basis, and it's going to lower your 100,000. So there's Mr. Leo says 62K. See, you guys are smart. I mean, I got a bunch of accountants out there, a bunch of smart people out there. You guys come to my rescue more often than I care to admit. All right. My husband and I used our self-directed IRAs to loan hard money to real estate investors. By the way, self-directed IRA is a fancy way of saying not with TD Ameritrade, not with a brokerage house. It's with a independent custodian who doesn't care what you invest in. So you can do real estate, you can do hard money loans, you can do all this fun stuff. We like IRA Club. They're actually really good. There's a bunch of others out there though. All right, so they use their IRAs to do hard money loans. We hold the note and the interest is paid directly to the IRA at closing. What tax documents do we have to provide the borrower each year?
There are two tax documents, the 1098 and the 1099 INT. The purpose of the 1098 is to report interest paid to the IRS on mortgage-backed loans where you've actually secured the property.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, most of the information would be provided on the 1098. You're going to show beginning balances, interest paid, real estate taxes paid, if you paid any of those things. In this case, probably not. If these are not mortgage loans, they're just hard money loans with no security, then a 1099 INT would be issued, but not by you, but by the person who is paying you that interest.
Yep. So they're paying you the interest. So if you have what Jeff just said is very clear. If you are the IRA and you are taking a secured interest in real estate, when you're doing the hard money, which you'd be crazy not to,
right,
you're going to get them a 1098. If they're paying you, they should be 1099-ing you, 1099 INT.
But you don't do both.
You don't do both? They don't have to give it to you if you're doing a 1099?
If it's a mortgage, they don't have to do a 1099.
Right. So then they don't have to do the 1099, so you're right. Jeff is 100% correct. So if you're doing a 1098 as the IRA, and really you should be going to your custodian, making sure they file that, because they're not going to do it automatically because they're a custodian. They never do. You know, and these things literally will take, what, 30 minutes to
do? Yeah, they're pretty simple.
Simple, yeah. So don't be too bad. You didn't see, this actually was a really long question, because then they were griping because one accountant told them they had to do one. The other one said the other. And I was like,
and we said that depends.
Yeah, we said it depends. That's going to be on your gravestone.
Is he dead? That depends.
Yeah. We have an S-Corp. Can I use PPP to pay guaranteed payments? You don't have guaranteed payments in an S-Corp. You have salary, Sal. You have guaranteed payments only in partnerships.
Right.
So if you have a partnership, then yes, you can. They gave us somebody says have a drink. You guys do not want me having any alcohol before I get on these. I just promise you that. Actually, I was doing one yesterday with Aaron Adams, who's hilarious, and he just starts, he doesn't realize it. He just talks. He always talks and dropping all sorts of language. I was like,
he forgets there's an audience.
Yeah, I was like, earmuffs, earmuffs. That's fun. Somebody says, can a corp fund an IUL? Can a corporation fund an IUL? Two answers to that. Corporation can't, like, it can give you money. You pay tax on the money. It deducts it as compensation to you. You put it into an IUL. It could do that. It cannot do just giving money into an IUL unless it's corporate-owned life insurance, in which case it can't deduct the premiums if it wants to have tax-free insurance payments, which would have to come back to the business. Like, this gets kind of convoluted. If you don't deduct the IUL payments, then the money that comes back after somebody's passing is tax-free. And IULs is an indexed universal life. It's a life insurance policy, basically. So can I have corporate-owned life insurance on an executive is usually the question.
Have you seen any of these IULs be like split dollar policies?
You can only do the split dollar nowadays. They did it away for the for-profit, but with the nonprofits, you can.
Oh, okay.
And what you're doing is you're loaning the money out of the nonprofit to the executive, and the executive's using those funds. And it's secured by the cash value of the
right. index.
I think we lost about 50% of the people or more on that one. So I'm not going to get into that any deeper. It's a very, very powerful tool. If you guys are not investing in an insurance, I probably not, like, insurance people would never like to say investing in insurance. You want to address foreseeable risks. And Eric just says, just by term. Actually, term, 99% of the time, the benefit doesn't go to anybody but the insurance company. So
right.
If I'm going to have a life insurance, unless I'm doing something like, hey, I have to secure performance under an agreement and I'm contracting with somebody for 10 years and it's going to cause me economic harm, what I'll oftentimes do is I'll put a term life on them in case they become, they pass, or I'll get a disability so that it pays me if they're not going to be able to perform.
Yeah, there's a reason term life is so cheap. Because the insurance companies, it usually doesn't cost them hardly anything.
And by the time you need it, they're not going to reinsure you. So I just get permanent insurance. Just do it and do it smart and do it through a fiduciary. And if you don't know what a fiduciary is, you just ask the person, are you a licensed fiduciary? Which means usually a certified financial planner or a 64. And all that means, Series 64, and all that means is that they have to put your interest first, and so they're not going to take you for a ride. Insurance folks, unless you have a really good one that you really trust, it's possible to get some bad stuff like that. Is it possible to borrow against term? No, that's why we don't like them. And we're using a tax code, by the way. It's 7702, where you have the cash value grows tax-free. And I get it. Everybody's got to.
Yeah, with term, you have no cash value, no equity.
Yeah.
It's only worth what it is if you die today.
So yeah, we use them for a lot of different purposes. So, I mean, maybe I'm skewed on it just because I've been using them for so long. But I use them because, A, I want to have the ability to have long-term care. And I use the death benefit to get to the long-term care. Somebody says Series 7 and 66 should also be fiduciaries. Yep. And it depends on your state. So they got that. Anyway, we'll get through this. Hey, Donna, we'll get with you. If it says June 22nd, people are getting busy, 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 we'll get you in sooner. So they'll get you through. Well, yeah, we'll get you. Patty, grab Donna and make sure she gets with somebody this week. All right. If I transfer my rental property that has a mortgage to a land trust that's under an LLC, what happens to the depreciation that I've been using for the past years when I do my taxes? It seems like a complete mess tax-wise.
Actually, it's just the opposite. When you contribute your rental property to an LLC or any other type of entity, it goes into the entity exactly the way it was in your hands. The depreciation stays the same. Your basis stays the same. It just continues on the way it was, only now it's in this entity rather than in your hands personally.
And even to reiterate, I could put something in an LLC and I could make that LLC disregarded for tax purposes if I want to. So not only, like, I can make it to where it's literally no difference.
Right.
And when I say literally no difference, as in literally, it's still on page one of your Schedule E on your 1040.
You mean literally, literally.
Literally, literally. Yeah, literally is not used enough.
Right? No, it's
I have
not.
No idea. That's kind of sad. I almost never say, when somebody says, let me be honest with you, I'm like, Are you lying to me? The rest of the time? I'm like, yeah. So when somebody says literally, okay. But what it means is that if you want to avoid any tax messes, you certainly can. Where it becomes the, where people perceive a tax mess is when you have a partnership return, because they're difficult. And there's really, like, if you want to have that extra tax return, or if you're required under your state, depending on who the owners are, all it's doing is passing down that information on your return. So if this was yours, you're in a spouse and you're in a separate property state, you're going to be a partnership. It's going to pass it down on your, on page two of your Schedule E, that's all. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be the same type of information that you're doing on your 1040. It's just going to be on the 1065 and then pass it down. That's all it is. So it sounds way more complicated than it is. But if you are going to be of any size, you need that 1065, because lenders that you are dealing with, you leave the personal arena and you start to go into commercial lenders. You start going into where they are lending on the asset, and you might be a guarantor, but they don't care about what you're making, or like they may look at it, but all they're looking for is making sure that they don't want to loan you money if they just have to foreclose on it. But what they really care about is that piece of real estate that's securing. And if you do that, you need to have a partnership return anyway. They don't want it to just go to you. They're usually they're going to make you set up a parent entity, and they're going to loan to that one, and it's going to buy all the properties in a secondary entity, and then they're securing the interest in the secondary entity plus the real estate, so they don't have to go through a really a horrific foreclosure process. What they're trying to do is just be able to take it. All right. I don't want to get into it. There's too many IUL questions out here. Use somebody else that knows that stuff. Closed a purchase in January, tried to close an LLC name, but bid at auction.com in personal name. I would have lost the property had I not done so, which is fine. How do I move to an LLC? I prepared a deed of trust when I file as now in the LLC. Are my expenses to repair incurred? No, it's literally, you're pushing everything into the LLC. It's taking everything that you had outside of the LLC into the LLC.
Right.
And the deed of trust is a little bit different. The deed of trust is from somebody else that loaned money. So it sounds like you bought this for cash. You don't have to worry about a deed of trust. You don't need it individually because you own the LLC. And it's just all going to flow through. So again, if we made this a disregarded LLC, meaning it doesn't file a tax return, you're literally no difference than you owning it. I said literally. So it's no different than you owning it. I need to get that literally out of my mouth.
I'm going to say irregardless in a minute.
That is actually a word. I had a Harvard guy tell me it wasn't a word, and I said, I guarantee you it's in the dictionary. I think I won $20. It's like the improper use of regardless. It's a double negative or something. Okay, if my job has been furloughed and I want to take money out of my work 401k and move to a self-directed IRA, are there new rules to follow? You're going to have a difficult time, by the way, moving money out of your work 401k. If you've been furloughed, they may let you roll. And if you move it into a self-directed IRA, then you can't borrow money from it.
So the new laws allow you to do certain things, the loans, hardship distributions, so forth. But you got to remember with these work 401ks, the plan also has to allow you to do this.
Yeah.
Just because it's in the CARES Act doesn't necessarily mean that your plan has adopted.
I think they're looking like, if I roll it into a self-directed IRA, I just want to get it out of there. And maybe I want to do some investments in the 401 or the IRA. Does it count it as income? No. They may give you a 1099-R, which is a fancy way of saying that they gave you the money out of the retirement plan. Mm-hmm. And it's going to say, do I have to recognize that as income? So on your 1040, it says 1099-R and how much of it is taxable. And the question becomes, did you put that all into an IRA? And if you did, then it's zero of it is taxable.
Now, here's the problem I see with this, Toby. If he's been furloughed but is still considered an employee of the company, mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to do a trustee-to-trustee transfer from that 401k to the self-directed IRA.
They may allow you to do depends on your company plan. Most don't, but sometimes they allow in-service distributions.
Yep.
The other route is you have the CARES Act, which allows $100,000 early withdrawal without penalty, which means you don't have to worry about the 10%. And if you tell them that you're going to put the money back into the plan, then they shouldn't do any withholding. And as long as you put that money back into a IRA, get this, You have until December 31st of 2022, because it's an early withdrawal, and you have up until that period of time to put the money back in before you have any tax liability. So long as you pay it back into your IRA or any 401k or any qualified plan before that period of time, you have no tax. Mm-hmm. If you are 65 or over, the IRS will allow a transfer from an active 401k. As you said, the company plan must allow the transfer. Yeah, it always depends. It always depends. And you put 410k too. I'm just messing up everybody. We're going to jump into some more. They're already beyond four, and people are answering those questions. We have a whole bunch of guys just killing it. My CPA tells me that putting a California property into a Wyoming LLC will trigger California taxes and fees. Is this correct? You want to hit it, or you want me to
hit it? You hit this one.
All right. So your CPA is right in something. It's going to trigger no taxes or no fees by itself, just the transfer. What is taxed is the LLC. And the LLC would then be considered doing business in the state of California if you put real estate in California that was generating rents. Technically, if it's not doing anything, it's not doing business in the state. But if you ever ask California Franchise Tax Board, is it doing business in the state? They're always going to tell you yes. But let's just assume that you're putting a California property that is a rental property into a Wyoming LLC. Then yes, that Wyoming LLC is now doing business in the state of California and should register both with the Secretary of State, and it would pay the $800 a year franchise tax. So they are correct there, but there's nothing else that's being triggered. It's just no matter who you are, if you have California property and you're putting it in an LLC, it's going to be taxed there. The workaround, and we've won this on audit, so I always get accountants yelling at me and screaming. We actually won this on audit, so I can just tell you what my experience is you own the property in a trust in California, and the trust makes its beneficiary an out-of-state LLC. So if you don't want to have the LLC sitting in California, you do that. And then California is going to come around and say, hey, but what if you own the LLC? We think that's doing business in the state. Well, make sure you don't own it. Make sure that you're a beneficiary of a trust and have another trust that owns it. It sounds stupid, I know, but if you have multiple properties, it's worth doing. You have either a living trust or personal property trust that you are merely a beneficiary of. And it's even more fun when you have the trustee out of state, because there's cases now that show that the trustee's domicile is where the income's earned. So anyway, just if you don't want to mess around with that, there are some workarounds. There's also some other trusts. You could do an asset protection trust if you want to avoid the LLCs completely, but that's kind of that's like bringing a bazooka to a gunfight. It's just, that's a very big tool to use for that. But in this particular case, your CPA is giving you something that's true. There's not taxes, it's fees. And the reason we know it's not taxes is because the Franchise Tax Board argues repeatedly that LLC franchise tax is actually a fee, because if it was taxed, it would have to be fairly apportioned and would have to pass mustard under the Constitution, which it wouldn't do. And they always lose these things in the court cases. Just look at Northwest Energetic Systems LLC, the Franchise Tax Board, and you'll see what I mean. There's a whole bunch. There's Bakersfield Mall. There's Veritas One. There's some bunch of fun stuff, or Ventas. Well, I forget if that's an R or an N. All right, you guys are getting your questions answered. Let's see if there's anything. Nothing that I want to jump into. Everybody's answering stuff, which is really great. So we're going to keep going through our questions, and we may actually be done. I know we're over, but we're not over as badly as we usually are. What is the best entity to use as a real estate agent?
If your state will allow it, I would say the best entity would be an S corporation.
That is correct, sir. And whether your state allows it is up to both your real estate board and your state legislature. So the real estate may say has to be an individual person. And then this is the trap people fall into. They will say, oh, that means I can't put it into an S corp. And this could literally, this could cut on $100,000 of income, this could cut about $10,000 of tax off just by running it through an S corp without getting into a bunch of other stuff. It's pretty much $10,000. It's about 10%, 10 to 14% is what it ends up putting in your pocket, thereabouts, on an annual basis.
And what is it, Texas? You have to be a real estate broker to be able to do this, or?
Yeah, it gets weird. So some states say you have to be the broker, you can't be the salesperson. Texas contradicts, there's two places. So I just say, just go ahead and if you want to be an agent, run it through your S corp, and what's going to happen, or LLC tax as an S corp. But what you do is if your broker has to pay you as an individual, then there's two pieces of paper that'll make that S corp income. And that is a employment agreement with the S corp with you, and a letter to your broker saying that you're under the exclusive control of that S corp. And that's via a court case. It was a court case with the IRS. And I always forget it. It begins with an F, the name of the case. I was doing this with a bunch of real estate agents, and they actually knew the case.
Wow.
In Texas. Yeah, I was doing it, and I was cracked up. And it was a CPA that was a real estate agent. She goes, oh, I know which case that is. It's like Fleischman, I think it is, something like that. I have it. If you're a Platinum member, by the way, guys, we actually have those two documents sitting there, and we actually do a quarterly meeting. I don't know, it's bi-yearly, it's twice a year, not quarterly. We do quarterly tax meetings, but then we also have these documents in our regular old minutes and resolution meetings that we do with our clients. We do those twice a year as a big group, and you get those in your portal. And all you're doing is saying, hey, I can't assign income, period. So I have to make sure that that income, even though it's been reported to me, that it's going to the S corp and that I have the backup so that it's treated as the S corp, because it's going to save me. Again, I'll put about $10,000 a year into my pocket if I do that right. Question and answer. Somebody says, what is a series LLC? Does Texas have a series LLC? Which is better? So Texas does have a series LLC statute. And what a series is you set up a series parent, and then all the additional LLCs underneath that parent or associated with that parent don't have to pay the state filing fee. The problem that we have, like Texas statute in particular, says that to get the protection of an LLC, you have to have maintained good books, and you have to treat it separately, do its own books, and a few other formalities. I can't remember the exact language in the statute. All I knew is that in a typical LLC statute, you pay it and you're good. If somebody tries to pierce it, they have to prove that you did or didn't do X, Y, or Z. In a series situation, you have to do X, Y, or Z to show that you get the benefit. So what I tend to look at is I'll use the Texas LLC if I'm only doing stuff in Texas. And if it's Texas real estate, I may use it. I still get a little weirded out that we don't have a lot of history on the Texas series LLCs. I don't know how the courts are going to treat them. And there are some practitioners that are very comfortable with the courts enforcing it, and some that are like, look, I'd rather, for $100 or whatever it is, I'd rather just know, you know, Texas is a little bit more to file, but then I don't think you have an annual fee. I'd rather just know that I'm good. And somebody put up there, Susan put up there, we have a bunch of stuff on our YouTube channel on it. Clint, my partner, does a lot on that. And then Carl, we have a Texas attorney on staff, Carl Zellner, who you can always reach out to. And again, it's always going to be your situation. So I want you to make sure that when you're doing these, that you're actually having somebody look at your precise situation. Because the answer, like Jeff likes to say so often, is
it depends.
It depends. Yep. Facts and circumstances. There's no one size fits all. How can we claim taxes in a property in a partnership while keeping it separate from our personal assets?
Once it's in a partnership, it basically is separate from your personal assets. And I kind of use basically. I hate when I use that one.
We're all putting in like these pontifications that now I'm listening to myself and it's starting to bug me.
So with a partnership, while you technically own a portion of the assets of the partnership, it's no longer your personal asset. So if you put a property, whether it's investment property, well, let's say it's an investment property, that is that partnership's property. And while you will retain a portion of that, the liability is out of your hands.
Yeah. And you're going to get, like when you say claim taxes on a property, I think you're looking at the depreciation and things. It's still going to flow down to your partnership. Does not pay tax at the partnership level. It passes it down to the partners. The bigger question here is this a general partnership where you have no liability protection and no difference between you and your partners and all of your other personal assets? In other words, they could do something goofy. And not only are you exposing the partnership to it, you're exposing yourself to it.
Yep.
Like they can come and get your other personal assets. I would use an LLC at a minimum to make sure that that property is separated from anybody else. If it's just you and a spouse, then I would just keep that property separate, just because I've seen it enough where, in the last 5 years, me personally, I've had a tree fall on a house and a house burned down. It happens. That's what you have insurance for. You know, thank God nobody was seriously injured. But if somebody had, there's a good chance I would have been in a battle with my insurance to provide coverage or to provide enough coverage. And so you just want to make sure that they're not creeping into your personal affairs, that it's in a nice little box, and that you don't have anything to worry about. All right. If we use the new PPP loan, and guys, I'm just going to give you guys the heads up. You're going to see this stuff on TV, and probably half of what I've seen on TV is wrong. The other half tends to be right, but people don't like the answers, so they say something wrong over it. So we'll go over this and we'll break this piece down. This might seem like it's complicated, but really it's pretty straightforward once we boil into it. If I use the new PPP loan for payroll and rents and utilities, that is forgivable. That is correct. But since I can't open my spa business now and all employees are getting unemployment, can I hire contractors to do repairs and have that count towards the forgivable part of the loan? Here's where it gets interesting. So what this individual is saying is their business is closed and I'm supposed to use the PPP money to pay for payroll, rents, and utilities. Mm-hmm. And they gave you what's called a covered period. And that covered period initially was 8 weeks from the date of receipt of the money. And the SBA wasn't helping us much. They were they weren't giving us a lot of guidance. Then they came out with this forgivable amount. They said, well, since your payroll might not match, we don't want you prepaying anything. It has to be incurred and paid during that covered period. Well, you may incur rent, but you're not paying it during the 8 weeks. You're paying it after, or you have 30 days to pay your utilities. So they came up and said, all right, you can go beyond as long as you're paying it a normal cycle. And then they said, well, my payroll, I may be in the middle of a payroll period. So they said, okay, we'll start the 8 weeks on the date that you start your payroll. So they were messing around with it. And then Congress got involved and said, forget that. 24 weeks. You now have a long period of time. So you have 24 weeks to use this up. So hopefully your spa is in business and we don't have to worry about this. Can contractors and the repairs that they're doing be part of the forgivable part of the loan? The answer is no, if they're paid as contractors. You have to do this as payroll, as interest on assets, like if you have a mortgage or if you have equipment that has interest that you pay on it, it's something that's attributed to that business. You can cover your rent. You can cover your utilities. And this is really important. You can't prepay your utilities for the year. It has to be for that covered period, which is now 24 weeks.
And that's what I kind of jumped at was the independent contractor part, because I answered this question this morning asking about using independent contractors and how much they're spending on them. And the whole idea is that, no, you can't use PPP money for the independent contractors, because those independent contractors may also be requesting PPP funds.
That's exactly what the SBA said. All right, now we'll get into the rest of this. But before I do that, Jim says, happy birthday. Thank you, Jim. I have to say, Jim. And Jim is really awesome. So I have to say that and say hey to UD, because he's really cool, too. If my payroll was 40 people, with many of them part-timers, with a monthly payroll of $80,000, and I spend $40,000 per month on 10 workers, do I get 50% of the loan? So this is where it gets kind of muddy. So the first calculation that you do is you say, all right, I get a loan, and it's basically 2.5 times my average monthly payroll. So if my monthly payroll is $80,000, I would be getting 2.5 times that. So I would be getting monthly payroll would be $200,000 is what kind of PPP loan I would get. Now let's say they're going to do $40,000 a month. And ordinarily you had 8 weeks, so you'd have $80,000. Then you'd also subtract from that the amount of workers you did not keep. And so this says they had 40 people and you're down to 10. You'd literally, I said literally again, you'd end up getting 25% of it, which would stink. However, with your part-timers, it's 2 part-timers equals a full-timer. So you have to calculate full-time equivalents.
Right.
So your 40 people isn't really 40 people. It's 40 full-time, and you have to lower that. So if you have, let's say, 20 part-timers, that's 10 full-time. So it sounds like we're doing these calculations, right? And that's why Congress took the Flexibility Act. The Payroll Protection Program Flexibility Act was passed last week. And it gave you 24 weeks so we could get away from this nonsense. Does payment of utilities and rents count towards the forgivable part of the loan? Yes. We'll leave it at that.
Right.
Yes, for that 24-week period, you are going to get your loan forgiven almost 100%, guys.
Now, I thought it only covered 25% of the loan. Was that changed also?
They changed. 60% has to be payroll. 40% can be the rents and utilities, which was the SBA came out and said, in Treasury, I should say, that they worked together on it, was 75%, 25%.
Right.
If that sounds muddy, guys, you just talk to your account. Talk to us. We do this stuff for hundreds of people. I'm sure we can figure it out for you. So we would love to work with you. And if you don't, if you have your own accountant and they're driving you crazy, by all means, use the Tax Tuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com or become a Platinum client. It's a whopping $35 a month, and you don't get billed.
Yeah, if you thought getting the loan was ugly, the forgiveness part is going to be even worse, I think.
They made it a disaster. They're just really being annoying. What about health insurance? Health insurance, company health insurance is included in the calculation for payroll cost. Also, company contributions to retirement plans is included in the payroll cost. So those things get added in. If you are, somebody wrote something about a sole proprietor, is the self-employment owner forgiveness 8 weeks? It's now 24 weeks. Yes. Yes, it is. Catherine, it's 24 weeks. The difference between the self-employment owner is you're allowed to take your average net income from the previous year, which is your monthly, what they call your monthly compensation amount. So if you were making, it was up to 100,000 is what they would give you credit for. So you made 100,000, that's 8,333. That would give you a loan for approximately 22,000. The forgiveness portion was maxed out at like 16,600 and some. Now it's going to be a lot bigger. So you're not going to have to worry about it. Reimbursed health insurance is not included in that calculation. And hey, Joan and Doug, happy birthday. Yay, till we got older. Everybody's so nice. If somebody, what about health? We already did that. I got $150,000 economic injury disaster loan, but the real estate business needed close to $2 million. Can I ask for an increase? I know you, Dr. Pepper. I know exactly. You can. What's going on is the a maximum amount that the EIDL loans that they're giving out right now is 150. And they are so backlogged. I thought they were going to outsource it. I thought that they were going to send it to lending institutions because the SBA was ill-prepared to handle all this. So my prediction in the very beginning was there's no way the SBA is going to be able to do this, so they're going to give it to somebody else to process all these SBA EIDL loans. But they've been trying to do it internally. The SBA, for those of you who don't know, they processed in 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of the PPP program, they processed more loans than they had in the previous 14 years combined. So they've been absolutely hammered. They are still working on loans from early April. And what they did is they said, no matter what the size of the loan, we're going to cap it at 150 and you can come back and ask again once we reopen. So it's annoying. Is preferred stock with a preferred return in equity participation considered debt in the context of triggering UDFI on IRA deals?
No.
Yeah. I'll make it really easy. No.
It's an investment.
And UDFI also doesn't apply to 401ks. So if you're ever worried about stuff like that, move it to a 401k. UDFI does not apply to 401ks. Somebody says, if the original PPP loan amount was less than the 10-week amount, is there any opportunity to increase the amount of the loan? Yeah, you go back to the bank.
For the PPP?
Yeah, somebody says for the PPP. You can go back. So it's 2.5 times your average monthly
compensation.
Benefits. Compensation if you're a sole proprietor or payroll, if you're running payroll. They're going to actually use your payroll records. What's this 10-week amount? I'm trying to think what that is. Oh, maybe the 10 weeks of... I'm not sure what that means. Somebody says, EIDL loans available for rental properties. That was just denied. They're being really difficult right now. Really, really difficult. So it's getting tough. I don't know what the 10 weeks, approximately 10 weeks. Was that for the beginning of the year that you did the calculation, John? I'm trying to think of what the 10 weeks is that you're referencing. It'd be 10 weeks.
Well, I was wondering if they were referring to the 2.5 months.
Yeah, 2.5. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Toby's got his head up his katush. 2.5 months. So the question, let me go back to your question. If he was less than, yeah, you go back and increase it, John. Absolutely. You have up to 2.5 times. So some people took less. they said, oh, I don't want to take it all, but now you can go back and get another one. There's still money left, by the way. There's probably another $50 billion waiting to be had. Do I have to pay taxes as a 501c3 nonprofit employer on monetary or non-cash gifts given to employees such as bonus checks?
Okay, I'm going to take the 501c3 out of it because this applies to all employers, including nonprofits. Any cash gifts given to all your employees, even if it's just a dollar, is subject to withholding rules. It is income to that employee. Non-cash gifts, you give them a turkey for Christmas, each gift can be up to $75. And I believe the total gifts, non-cash gifts you can give to an employee each year is limited to, it's $1,500 or $1,600 in that range. Gifts to non-employees are actually limited even further. They're only limited to $25 each as far as being deductible. So cash gifts, they always got to be reported on W-2. They're always subject to tax. Non-cash gifts, if they're de minimis below $75, are not.
So you're paying tax on this. And if you give any money to employees, you got to put it in their paycheck.
Right.
So, yeah, make it really simple. I know we love to give gifts, but it's bonus check is compensation for a job well done, usually. You can do somebody says, a hilarious example of turkeys is gifts. That's what Costco gives its employees every November. Absolutely. There's a reason they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Or a ham. Anyway, I don't want to keep getting into it. I'll dive in. If you get reimbursements to employees, they don't have to report, then that's not part of it. So sometimes it's better to have an employee reimbursement where you say, hey guys, we're going to reimburse everybody $500 towards their health care or something like that. I think you can still do that with some of these reimbursement plans. All right. Somebody says, hey, if I got $12,500 with a PPP and without getting into all the calculations, now I can basically, right, I'm going to get the whole thing forgiven. Absolutely. Catherine, you're not going to pay anything. I got my loan amount and it was $2,900. This must be PPP. Is it even worth the time and money to get the loan? They can't charge you anything, Vito, so it's free $2,900. So you decide whether it's worth it to do a little paperwork for $3,000. Absolutely. I'll take that action. Yeah. If you don't want to, I'll do it for you. You just give me the $3,000, right? No. Give it to charity. Do a little elbow grease and use the money for your payroll and then take an extra the money that you would have done and give it to charity if you need it. There's people that really need it. All right. Since Arizona is the only state that requires the name and address of beneficiaries to show on deeds, how can one form a land trust in Arizona with a beneficiary as an Arizona LLC, which can be owned by a Wyoming holding LLC? Some of your guys' heads just popped. This is funny. How can a trustee get around that? Well, this is the beautiful part. So this is what's funny. So Arizona has a statute that requires, I think it's AZ-401 or 404 or something like that, that requires that you list the name of the beneficiaries on a deed. However, it's never whether I can do something. It's what's the penalty for not doing it? So the penalty is the trustee could void the transaction. So let me ask you something. If you don't want to list your name as a beneficiary because you want to keep your ownership of real estate private, and you are the trustee, are you going to avoid your own transaction? No. All this means, it's a fancy way of saying Arizona has a statute. Yes, it does. And we applaud them for passing a statute with absolutely no teeth in our situations where you want to keep your name out of public record. And I always say this, if you want your names out there in a public record, I don't want my name out there in a public record associated with properties. Sorry, I don't want to make some, you know, I hate to say this because some lawyers get mad, but ambulance chasers, right? There's a certain portion of the attorney world that advertises on billboards and doesn't have their heart in the right place. They would sue a ham sandwich if they thought it might give them a few slices, right? They're just looking for victims is what they're doing, or they're processing claims. And I don't want to put a bullseye on myself because they see that I own 20 properties, right? You don't want to do that. In fact, this is a great story because I have a friend that owns an insurance brokerage and she has to talk to doctors all the time. She says, do not tell them that you are a doctor. Do not say, like, you don't say MD or DR or mention you're a doctor, because the case that was worth $300 or $400 or $5,000 worst case scenario now became a $50,000 to $100,000 case because you have something to lose and they can tie up your time and they know that time is valuable. So you go away from this. So somebody, I just saw some good questions come in. So first off, on the idle amount. So my friend Vito, so if you get a $2,900 and you got it from the idle, if it was, that had to be the emergency grant, which is not, you don't have to pay that back. It's free money. So you keep that. If you get an additional amount, then you have to do these onerous documents. They seem draconian, but they're actually not. They're actually really simple. It's basically you're giving them a secured interest in your stuff so that you can't just liquidate your business and go out of business and not pay back the SBA. But it's just basically a 30-year loan at 3.75%. So yeah, I would still take it. Somebody says, do you have a book on how to get started on all your rental properties? I'd be interested. Mark, I'm going to have Patty send you a really cool webinar I just did with Aaron Adams. And Aaron and I talk everything about investing. And so it was just basically basic real estate investing or for beginners or people who have lost money in real estate. In other words, a lot of people, you know, they get told this is what I should invest in by their agents or by their somebody who's selling you stuff. And they don't know what cash flow real estate is. They don't know how to calculate all the numbers and it really stinks. So yeah, we actually go into it and we do a whole bunch in the cash flow world, guys. Infinity Investing is built all around cash flow. All we do is we look at the clients. Jeff, we do well over 5,000 returns. Is that a fair statement?
Oh yeah, we did 5,500 last year.
All right, so 5,500 returns. Do we do mostly real estate returns?
Yes.
Do we see who makes money and who doesn't?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep, and do the people that make money tend to do the same thing over and over and over?
Yes, they do.
Right, so what we do is we look at who makes money and we get to, so I get to look and see, like if somebody says, oh, I make a ton of money, and then you look at their return and they don't. Like a lot of the real estate gurus, a lot of the stock market folks out there, they don't make money doing what they're teaching you to do. They make money selling you the education to teach you how to lose money. That bugs me because I see these guys and, you know, and you're doing the returns of these people and you're like, hey, if I did 100 returns for somebody of this group and 80% of them lost money, I'm probably losing faith in the guy that's teaching it, right? Or the guy that's teaching. So the people that make money, it's actually really boring how they do it. And it's all cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. So we'll make sure we get that out to you guys. You guys are always invited to do the Infinity Investing. Patty, if you have that link, we'll actually throw it up. I know it's like aba.link/IIW or something. But if you send that out, I do a class every month for free. I forget which month we are doing just kids. So you have to be a Generation Z. That's, I think, is August, but I think June and July, we're still doing regular investors. And all we're doing is teaching people how to make money, because guess what? If you make a whole bunch of money, that's good for everybody. It just asks that you have a purpose behind it. So make sure you're giving a good chunk of it away. All right. The SBA is not very clear on what rental home costs I'm allowed to spend SBA idle loans on. And so we just had somebody say they got denied their idle loan. And the reason being is because the SBA keeps moving the goalposts all over the place. And don't lose faith. We will get these through no matter who it is. They gave us in the first few weeks advice, you know, a way to do things, and then they started changing that. And now they've kind of gone full circle. I understand that I can use idle funds to make monthly mortgage payments for my rental homes. Can I use the idle funds for capital improvements on my rental home, such as installing a new roof? Can I use idle funds for all the following expenses? And so without even getting to that, I'll tell you what you can use idle funds for. Any damage that you suffered as a result of the national disaster, which is COVID. So if you lost rents as a result of this, then this is to replace those rents and use it on any of the costs. The only restriction is taking it out personally and use it as dividends or distributions to the owner. You're not supposed to do that. But I can also tell you that they are buried trying to make these loans go through, and they're 2 months behind. What do you think their compliance is going to be like? So what I say is put the money aside, use it for regular expenses, maintenance, repairs, utilities, property management fees, leasing fees, HOA dues. All of those work. Not a problem. Just don't distribute it to yourself and buy a Rolex.
But what about the capital improvements?
I wouldn't do it on capital improvements either.
I would think for capital improvements, you're going to have to prove a need to do that capital improvement, such as
if it's
for the protection of the home.
All right. So EIDL loans, think disaster like a hurricane or a tornado. So tornado comes and tears your roof off. Then you're repairing the roof. Capital improvement denotes betterment, which I wouldn't call it capital improvements. I would just say I'm repairing or something like that. I just wouldn't use it.
But this isn't the time to install a new kitchen or...
Correctamundo. You know, unless, hey, I'm using all the EIDL money on the maintenance, repairs, utilities, property, and I have some other money, then I could use that for the capital. That's why you keep it separate. Like, literally put it in a separate account or just track it separately and say, this is what I spent it on. If, in the unlikely event, they come through and say, here's what did you spend it on, you'll have it readily at your fingertips. Then you run it through your accountant to make sure that it says the right things. I know that we're way long now. I don't know. You talk so dang much, Jeff.
Can't shut me up.
All right. I'm allowed to include EIDL loan interest payments on my Schedule E as an expense in my rental homes. Am I allowed? Excuse me. If yes, what are the guidelines for how EIDL interest is assigned against my multiple rental homes?
I mean, the easiest answer here is you would allocate interest based on how much of that EIDL you spent on each of the homes.
Yeah, you decide what the loan is for on those properties. If you're doing it the way we teach it, you have a holding entity, and I would be allocating it all to the holding entity, which then you'd be allocating it pro rata to the various properties. And yes, the interest is deductible. Hey, Patty, throw up the link in the chat for whatever we did with Aaron, if you can, because Aaron's really funny. Aaron has almost 3,000 properties that he manages. He's done over $250 million of single family transactions in the last 10 years or so, and has 250 properties of his own that are everything from mobile home parks to mostly single family and a couple of apartments. And he's awesome, and he'll let you keep, like, you'll see when you do the, if you actually go through it, I give you guys something at the very end of that that's ridiculous and it's free, and I'll just give you an idea. He will pay to have you come out to his course, and it won't cost you anything. You just have to pay for the plane ticket. He'll feed you and put you in his hotel and everything. I think he's, some of you guys have got it, and it's just cash flow properties. You don't have to do anything. Just learn it, share it with somebody else. All right, last thing. I know we're long. There's the free book. Again, no strings attached. It says you get a consultation, you just politely decline. Read the book. If you like Tax Tuesday, you'll like Tax-Wise Business Ownership. And you guys rock. You guys did a really good job today. Use the code Tuesday in there to make sure you get the free book. Otherwise, it's going to want to charge you like $24.95 plus shipping, so it'd be close to $30. If you don't want to read it and you know somebody who runs a business, get it for them. I don't care. This is fun. Somebody says, I'm going to answer one more question before we go on. My partner and I bought a house for investment and are currently using it as a short-term vacation home. We would like this to be the beginning of a new investment venture together and like to treat it as its own asset where we pay taxes and keep it separated. Is the LLC entity? So, Gray, I would actually say, is it the house that you live in it, or is it a second house? Because I would probably put this off aside into a second home. Yeah, so... what I'd end up doing with that one, you know, quite frankly, I said honestly, is depending on how long the period of time is, it's either going to be in an LLC, and if you're going to have longer than 7 days on average, then it's an investment. If it's less than 7 days average, then it's an active business, and I'd be looking at the numbers to see if you're going to have profit. So I would talk to one of our folks. By all means, Greg, Patty can reach out to you, or Susan, or... Pio or Elliot, if they're still sticking with us, somebody can reach out to you. Any of those guys would be great. Probably Elliot, and have Elliot kind of walk you through the this, that, and the other. It says books allocations are done on your website. So, yeah, you guys are smart. You guys actually look at all this stuff. All right, podcasts. Speaking of smart, you can always come into our podcast. Somebody says, I'm sorry, where do I get the book? Patty will give it to you. That's the, I don't know what the link is. I just throw stuff out sometimes, and these poor people have to clean up after me. There it is. She just sent it to you. Replays of these, generally speaking, you're going to get the last couple if you register. But otherwise, they're going to be in your Platinum portal. And if you're not platinum, please reach out to us and find a way to become platinum. It's worth it, $35 a month. Again, you can ask any question you want. There is a sign-up fee, but it's usually waived if you do an entity or tax package or this, that, or the other. So there's always ways to make it free. iTunes, Google Play, you can go in there, look at that, and I see a bunch of you guys doing stuff. Somebody says, Toby is long-winded and Jeff is a saint.
But it's Toby's birthday, so we got to be nice to him.
My poor wife, she's always like, what time are you going to be home? Like after tax duty, she goes, it's Tuesday.
You're going to be late.
Yeah, we've done tax Tuesdays in Hawaii. We've done them in all sorts of different places. It's always fun. You guys are awesome. Thanks, Gray. Thank you, Gene, everybody. And so there you go. So people are still asking for the book. Patty, you can actually do that with everybody. I'm just going to see if I can steal it. I'm going to see if I can steal. Take the Anderson Advisors TW book and, oh, you already did it. It's sitting there in the chat feature. So she'll share it out. If you have questions, shoot them to TaxTuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com. Visit our website. Thank you, guys. You guys rock for taking some time and learning the taxes. It's not all bad. And of course, we throw a little bit of business into it. So I really appreciate you guys. Jeff, any final words before we run off?
No, I'm glad to keep doing this. We learn quite a bit, just like you all do. So
it's the only way I do any sort of continuing education at this point.
That's right.
I go through classes, but I'll tell you what, I learn more from you guys than I do from any lawyer or any accountant.
Well, we know those accountants and CPAs that listen in are going to bust us if we say something wrong. So
I've had that. I've gotten a few fun emails. They're like, well, I don't know if I agree with that. Eric will make sure that we get you. Patty, grab Eric and make sure that we're supposed to ship something to him that we get it. And Susan, by all means, we will chat you up. And Eric, you must be in Texas. I think I still remember you telling the Californians, please don't come out to Texas.
Oh, was he the one?
Yeah. Where in Texas, Eric? We got to know. It's got to be Arlington. Where's Arlington? You did a bunch of stuff in Texas, didn't you? I don't know where that is. I'm going to go look it up.
It's where the baseball team is.
Well, that's Arlington. Arlington. Are you down by DFW? No, that's somebody else's from DFW border. Yeah, we're thinking Arlington, but this is Harlington.
Harlington. I don't know where that's
down
at.
South Texas. Yep. So are you near El Paso? There's the South Padre Island. So I'm going to go look it up. South Padre. Yep. All right.
It's because they used to say it's hardly Arlington. They just stuck a Harlington.
Anyway, we love Texas here. So we're going to say, and then we love California too. And the Texans are pleading with you, please. Maybe they could send Newsom to Texas. Anyway, we'll see you guys later. You guys have a good one.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.